what was better than HR hub was roasting people a week after lunch, right? It was roast time and training programs. Which is why the only way we're going to be able to work through this afternoon is to make it as interactive as we can. Yeah? And I'm certainly no expert. The idea really is just to share with you a little bit of the sort of things that Microsoft is thinking about as we undergo a huge transformation internally in our organization, to see if some of those resonate with you, and maybe to share a little bit around what perhaps all of us can think about together. Does that make sense? So I'm just going to talk to you first about really the way we're looking at Microsoft and HR. We're going to reimagine the entire function, right? And I don't know if I can click on this. Can I have a clicker or something? What did it say? Is this it? Yes. And the reason that we're having to reimagine HR in Microsoft is really because we are now in a mobile first and a cloud first world, right? Where Satya Nadella has re-established the strategy of the company to say we are a platform and productivity company. And in that world, the role of HR really is to make sure that employees continue to do their best work, but we need to continue to support deep learning on a continuous basis, more so than ever before, right? And we also need to make sure that our employees grow and thrive. If you look at that, it isn't very much different from perhaps the role of HR in any organization, except that what you're going to find is that the role of HR now has really become less of process and more of the owner of a cultural transformation. And really, as we move to a cloud and mobile first world, nobody knows, at least in Microsoft, exactly what that means in terms of talent. So the role of HR is to figure out what that means in terms of talent and to help evolve the thinking of the company in that transition. We reached out to some of you, the team here reached out to some of you and asked you what it was you expected from this session. And some of you came back. And what we've tried to do is make sure that the session is around the three or four areas that you said you were interested in hearing. So if there's anything here that you don't want to hear that you want to hear more about but is not here, do feel free to let me know and we'll talk about it. It's just that it didn't come to us as feedback, so I left it out. Right? There are three aspects of the HR role that we're looking at. One is how to transform the organization from two pieces of the puzzle. One is our performance appraisal system. I believe there was some interest from that in terms of the curve and so on. And the other is how to acquire talent. Right? We'll talk a little bit about employee growth and engagement from the perspective of talent development. Right? And from the perspective of engaging employees in a period when mind space is very fragmented. Right? And the third really is in order to focus HR's work on different areas, a lot of the transactional work in HR is going to have to be treated completely differently. Okay? And therefore we need to simplify and we need to get really good at HR operations and managing employee success. So I heard a little bit of interest around that as well, so I've kept that. Does this make sense? Is there anything else you'd like us to cover? Let's start a little bit with performance and talent acquisition. In Microsoft, we've changed over the last 18 months or so, we completely transformed the way we assess talent. We had the traditional bell curve. We had the top so many and the bottom so many percent, which a lot of you, I'm sure, still have. But the way that Microsoft needed to change meant that a lot of different parts of Microsoft needed to come together to land one particular piece of success. Right? A lot of different pieces of the puzzle had to come together in an organization which operated very much earlier in silos. Because of this reality, we said that we will now assess everyone on three parameters. One is your individual accomplishments, MBOs. Everybody has MBOs. Yeah? The other is collaboration, two pieces of collaboration. The difference between this and what we used to do or what other companies really do is collaboration is a value usually. Right? It's one of the values of a company or it's one of the strategic intents of a company, one of the guiding principles of a company. It's a soft word, so we've made it a really hard word. Right? And what we've said is that it's divided into two parts. One is we will actually measure how you contribute to the success of others. And the other is we will actually measure how you help how you use what others have done to help yourself. Alright? And the reason we do that is we say that the world is changing so rapidly and impact needs to be made so much more significantly that if you do it to yourself, you work in this much of the square. But if you use others and you learn from others, then your square expands without having to add resource. Because again, one of the things I've heard that all of you were a little bit concerned about is how do I do more with less or limited resource, right? And one way is to leverage the strength of the weak versus just the ability of the eye. And that really is one of the things that we've changed, right? So we no longer have a bell curve. We no longer have distribution performance ratings. 1, 2, 3, 4, A, B, C, D, E doesn't exist anymore. So that really is a completely new philosophy of performance. The other thing we do is we don't have an annual performance appraisal or even a mid-year performance appraisal. So many organizations have one, some have two. We have left it to employees and managers to decide whether you want two, three or four, but no less than two. Right? Now these are not appraisals anymore, they're conversations. So they're what we call employee connects. They're informal, they're supposed to be shorter, and very interestingly, you set your core priorities or your MBOs at one point in the year. Right? But if all of these informal check-in points, what you do is, there are two separate sections. One is looking back, and the other is going forward. Right? And the looking back section talks about what could you have done differently for greater impact. So I'm going to let you think about that because you're our HR people, right? How difficult is it for a person to tell his manager, here are the things I did not as well as I could have. And what sort of a cultural shift in mindset does it need to give a person the courage to do that? So performance appraisal system is one. Enabling the culture to start thinking that it's not risky to admit failure is a completely different ballgame altogether. And the other thing we say is, here's what I'm going to do in the future. And here's how, what I need to learn and what I need to develop to do that. So a lot of the development plan comes in here. Okay? So your development plan now suddenly gets completely tied to your ability to land impact in a collaborative context. Interestingly also, this is separate from the rewards discussion. So a connect discussion, what we call this discussion between the manager and the employee at 2 to 3 points in the year, is not the same as the discussion where I'll actually give you your salary increase letter, your merit increase. That's a completely separate discussion, right? And the reason we've done that is because we want to make sure that this is a discussion that is focused on this, not a discussion that's focused on this. So we actually break that conversation. The interesting thing we do here is, and I'm sure many of you have this, but in Microsoft also, the Connect conversation is completely online. The historical data for an employee, because it's online, travels to the next manager when the employee travels. Right? So it's all linked to the employee's ID. You know, in Microsoft we call it an alias. It's all linked to the employee's ID. So as the employee travels, his entire performance history travels with him during his entire tenure. And this is a global movement because the global systems are all shared. That's what I had really in terms of connects. Before I move on, any questions on this piece? This is the performance appraisal piece there.
Can you talk to more about separate from the award
discussion? Tell me, what would you like?
So one part is giving feedback, the other one is deciding someone to write, which is based on some data.
Yes.
So how do you analyze the appraisal? Does input flow in from your 2 to 4 year discussion, 2 to 4 times 4 year discussion? Or is there some other parameters? Because you have to decide to give more to a better performing employee and less to a performing employee. Is there any mechanism that you can use for that?
So it's really interesting. Our language is very much the sort of language you used, which is a better performing and a worse performing employee. Right? And what we've moved completely away is relative ranking. We've completely moved away. So what we've said is, here are the benchmarks. For getting this much percentage of reward, this is the sort of benchmark performance you should show. And if you're not showing this much benchmark performance, then here, depending on where you really fall within the benchmark that you're supposed to deliver on, this is the approximate reward that you get. So we work to a budget. We don't work at all anymore to relative rating. So it's a very different philosophy. And that's one of the reasons why we need to keep the two conversations. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about two pieces, because when I said collaborative collaboration is often anecdotal, right? And often what will happen is that two employees will say to each other, hey, listen, I'll say nice things about you and you say nice things about me. Especially when it's going to be one of the three circles where I assess your impact, right? So we've got to make sure that we are robust about this because we know the very many loopholes that there could be in this process. And there are two things that Microsoft has done in order to make sure that the feedback is one is anonymous and real, honest, right? And one is a feedback tool that we have. So every time you go into the Connect tool, you can go in and say, hey, listen, I want feedback from these 4 or 5 or 10 or 12 people. And that feedback goes directly to your manager. And the way the tools are set up, because we rely a lot on technology to make our performance appraisal process work, the way the tools are set up is my manager and I, online, can agree who the people are who I will respond, who I will get responses from. Right? So it's not people who are all very pro me, it's not people who are all very against me, it's people who are going to give you a balanced feedback, top, bottom, 360. That's one, which happens sort of, you can do it as many times in the year as you like. It's a short, quick sort of survey. The other one is a 360-degree survey, which again we encourage, because this helps again to feedback into the three circles of impact. This is a far more intense survey, it's very much deeper, it's very much used for OD and L&D type interventions. And again, it's completely online. Right? These are two things that we use to piggyback on a Connect process. Okay. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about talent acquisition because a lot of questions actually from you came out about how we are looking at attracting talent. So just a few things I thought I'll touch upon that we are doing a little bit perhaps differently than we did in the past to see whether it helps any of you. One is we did decide that as the company is going through a transformation, the only way the company transforms is if the people in the company change. Right? Change the way they work, change the way they think, change the skill sets that they have. But then you look around and say, hey, listen, how do I help my own people grow and develop? But then how do I bring new thinking in? Which is interesting because the new thinking you want is different from the new thinking you wanted 3 months or 4 months ago. So the first thing you need to do is be very clear what kind of people with what kind of mindset and skill set you need to hire. So we re-looked at the entire assessment criteria. As you bring new people in, we re-look at the entire criteria with which we assess those. Right? The other thing we had to do is train hiring managers. So hiring managers who were recruiting born in the cloud folks or who were recruiting device folks. Or who were recruiting a new form of cloud folks. Those hiring managers were trained separately on how to assess, how to look for, because I don't have the skill set, I'm not going to look for it in you. So we did something like that. We identified where that talent sat, because honestly, India is still evolving. So the number of people who you have who will be able to bring that new mindset are limited. So you have to be very, very specific about where you're going to find that talent. We then said we need to target millennials. Who understand, it's like I was talking to someone just outside at lunch today and they said to me, I said, you know, I'm not very good with technology and so on. And they said, hey, listen, talk to your son. Himani was, I didn't say, talk to your son, talk to your children, they'll be able to help you. Because millennials are native technology. We have acquired the ability, right? And when we're trying to make a very quick transition to a completely new type of technology, the people we will need are millennials. Does everybody understand the term millennials? Okay. But getting them is a whole different challenge, right? I know there were some questions around how do you engage people when they want to do Facebook. Right? So we'll talk about that a bit, all right? We then said, okay, what is our balance in internal versus external? Because it's wonderful to go out and get, but some of the best people in the industry sit in Microsoft. So what is the balance between internal folks and external, and how do you accelerate the development of your internal team? That's something we did some work on. We looked at diversity because we said that it's really important to have youth and women because they reflect the marketplace. So we did a lot of work around diversity. We spent a lot of time on onboarding plans. And there's a lot of HR research to show you can get the smartest person from the external market into your organization. But if their first 90 days doesn't go well, they are likely to be far less successful. 90 days. Right? So we worked a lot on 30-60-90-day programs. There is a book actually that we rely on very heavily. I think it's called The First 90 Days or something. It's really fantastic book for anyone in HR who wants to get really strong at making sure that new hires land successfully across levels. More for senior levels, but works very well across levels. And we kept an intent for ourselves that every time you lose someone, you need to get somebody who's better. Very tough when you're recruiting at the scale at which Microsoft recruits. And you've got to get better with each hire, because otherwise you're not going to build capability. Right? That's what I had really to talk to you a little bit about talent acquisition. It's a little bit more theoretical, because I haven't really sort of spoken very much about, I wasn't sure what specifics you were interested in, but we can pause here for a couple of minutes if you have any specific questions.
How do you make sure that
So you want to tell, you're asking me, let me understand, how do you raise the bar on the assessment, the way we assess it?
Yeah, of course. And while as a manager I'm hiring my people, I look at people that I would love to work for. If something goes like a different way, I would love to work for. Why should I look the guy that he should work for?
So that's a very interesting question, and that's a question more about human nature, I think, than process, right? And we talk about both a little bit. First, you've got to, I think, in an organization, establish a culture where people are not afraid to hire better than them. Because job security becomes a really true concern in people's minds. That's just the truth of it. Right? So the very first thing is to reward managers who hire better than them. Get someone who hires better, and make a role model of him. Accelerate his own career. Make him successful. Showcase him. And then what you're doing is you're creating role models who will go out and demonstrate that same behavior. To me, the first thing is to get rid of the fear. Right? And after you get rid of the fear, you've got to make sure that the people hiring know what to look for. Today, I think people are told to hire to this role. Right? So if I'm in level, I don't know, 50, and I'm hiring someone at 48, the role template I'm given is a level 48 role template. So from a process perspective, am I giving him a role 52 level template? And if I am, then does he understand what that means for him himself? Or how to even hire for someone who's better than him? So there are process issues, there are assessment and training issues here, all of which I think we're going to have to look at together.
How do Microsoft get into managing this challenge, which is spread across?
We do a lot in terms of raising the bar on assessment, right? But what we don't tell a manager to do is to hire better than yourself. We haven't reached that level of evolution yet. It totally is something that we want to do, but it isn't something where I honestly think we've reached yet. Where we've reached today is to get more clarity in terms of what it is you're supposed to look for, and they are not the capabilities of today. They are what we call transformational capabilities. Okay? So from when we used to look at, say, a business head, right? When we used to look at a business head, we look for someone who has strategic thinking. We look for someone who has strong people leadership. We look for someone who had been and demonstrated deep experience or driving or deep experience of turnaround, perhaps, in an organization of a similar size and scale. Today, when we look at business leaders, we look at people who can manage ambiguity. We look at people who are very, very highly customer focused. We look at people who have demonstrated the ability to look around the corner. We look at people who are able to handle very strong matrixed organizations. And we look for people who are very deeply, intensively collaborative. Very, very different, right? And then you have to make sure that the hiring managers who are doing those interviews, and incidentally the HR folks who are doing those interviews, are all aligned on the definitions of what those words mean and how to ask questions around those words, the BEI. Yeah? So those are the sort of things that we are doing. We aren't there yet, it's something we are evolving, but that's the approach that we're taking. Is that right? Okay. please.
I want to know more about that 90-day plan.
Yeah.
It is totally depending upon individual skill set or their role or their designation.
So it depends with seniority. If it's a very senior person, a business leader or business leader minus one, it will be very specific to that individual. Yeah. If it's someone who's probably lower down, then there'll be more generic ones which are focused. That's it. It differs with you. And it's the 10-20-70. Yeah? Everybody knows 10-20-70. Yeah? Okay, so it's a 10-20-70. So on the job, mentor, coach, peer buddy, studies, learning, books, all of that. All together. I'm done with this and I'm going to just switch here to talent development and employee engagement. Right? On talent development, we're very, very clear. The onus for development lies on the individual, not on the boss. Okay? The onus for development lies on the individual. We talk a lot about create your own destination-oriented development plan. We talk a lot about come and have a conversation with me in your connect about your career, right? But then go out, show me, get your development plan done, talk to whoever you need to do to make it real, and let's come back and chat about it, right? In order to do that, you have to give employees the resource. And a lot of our resources are online, right? And the advantage is that they can be customized to your very specific individual needs. So we have something very, it's a really cool thing, it's called a career guide. Alright, and I just put a snapshot of it here because honestly this is something that before I joined Microsoft, I struggled with tremendously. Okay, but we've managed, I think, in a way to track it here. What it does is, it allows me to go here and say, hey listen, I'm HR manager in a sales function. Alright, and then what it will show up is it will show up all the technical, functional and professional competencies that I need to have in that role. And then I'll go here, at another preference, I'll say, okay, now I want to move to a marketing role in, I don't know, Windows. Alright? And it'll throw up all of that and it'll show the difference. Alright? So what it does is, it helps me to say, this is what I already have, this is what I need, and therefore these are the competencies I need to build which go into my destination focused development. It's very cool. When I came here, it was one of the things I was happiest about because it makes development so much easier. Right? The other thing we do is we have a lot of online resources. Okay? So all a person needs to do is go into our, we have something called HR Web, which I'll show you in a little bit. You go into HR Web, you click on learning and development, and a lot of self-learning options come in, and you just go in here and say, here's what I want to do. So you could have onboarding resources, you could have training workshops where you attend, it's live streamed and you attend. You could have video recordings, you could have books, you could nominate yourself for training programs, wherever they may be held. But it's all in the click of the button and it's all success. Yeah. A lot of stuff is available online. A lot of learning resources are available online. And the advantage of this is that you can track it online. So then I know which employee has completed what, and therefore, when I'm assessing you for another role, I have a track record of the development interventions you made. That's on L&D. I wasn't going to dwell too much because very few questions on this came up. But is there anything else you'd like me to cover up? By role, we define it by role. And there are definitely, we call it FRI, there are definitely some, we call it field readiness index, some trainings that you absolutely have to do. So for example, if you are going to be this type of seller, selling this type of product, then you have to do these sort of trainings and you have to be certified at either 100, 200 or 400 level in terms of depth. And all that gets tracked online. The trainings you've attended and the certifications are all tracked online. If you're a manager or a manager of managers, there's mandatory training you have to go through as well, right? So there's functional, there's technical kind of training which is mandatory, but there's also leadership kind of training which is mandatory. And the third bucket is compliance training. Some of that is also mandatory. All, but most of that actually is done online. And I'm going to show you a little bit of that. As we, when I get to the tools, HR tools part, I'll show you a little bit.
How important is
It's a really interesting question because one of my happiest stories on L&D this year has been up with a MOOC, right? We've tied up with INSEAD and we are doing MOOCs with INSEAD and they've done one session for us on strategy and another on financial acumen. So they're basically doing a truncated MBA program for our people and they're doing it out of either Singapore or France and they are doing it through MOOC. So those things are working. This is, but Microsoft across the board. Where we have 120,000
members. Still, that's a web of Microsoft.
It's Microsoft.
MOOC for Microsoft. But do you really leverage some of the online MOOCs which are available today?
We do tie up with Harvard and Wharton. Right? But we haven't done too much of that. We've tried, I think, one session. In the last 6 months or so. I think it was Wharton, if I'm not mistaken, this year, where the professors stream and we dial in. Are those the ones you're talking about? And they do it across the board.
People, how do they identify themselves and you give them?
We would communicate that these are MOOCs that Microsoft will help you be a part of. They are available on these days and here's the link. That's what we did with that Wharton. Right? But again, nascent. We are the ones that are successful are the ones which are captive to Microsoft. The ones which are not captive to Microsoft, the reason I don't necessarily want to say they work is because I have no way of telling. I don't get feedback, any level of compatibility. I get no feedback.
But
right?
those
I don't
MOOCs, if people go online and do, I think they're self-sufficient in terms of business certification.
They do. I've got to certify. That is true. We haven't experimented too much, but it's definitely something that I've worked on this. Engagement. Big one. Again, lots of questions that some of you had around work-life flexibility. Right? And in Microsoft, it works really well. It really does work. And that's a quote actually from an employee in SMSG. Okay? It helps us to be flexible, but it also helps us, despite being flexible, to do more and achieve more. And a couple of things we use. We use Link very actively. I don't know whether you all are all familiar with Link, but I am the biggest fan of it. You know? And in my previous organization, we had Outlook, but nobody ever used Link there. You know? And here, irrespective of whether an employee is in Calcutta, where we have 15 people, or in Chennai, or in Hyderabad where we have 19, or in Delhi where we have 350, or Bangalore where we have 1,000. It doesn't matter, because when there's link, you're connected. When there's link, you don't feel isolated. When there's link, there's video, right? So I can do large meetings, small meetings, one-on-one meetings. People don't have to fly even for face-to-face. People don't have to fly for connects, because I'm seeing you on video. It's sort of the equivalent of Skype. You know, and I know that some companies use Skype for this, but Link works just fantastically. It has this little window for a chat. So we use a lot of Link, and we find that what Link helps us to do is stay in touch with our employees wherever they are. And what it does for our employees, it helps them to stay in touch with work wherever they are. So it's a wonderful way and a very highly effective way of, one, keeping remote employees engaged, and two, managing work-life balance. Because in many companies you have to work late, but you can work from home if you're okay. Right? You're going to take a late night call or a 5 a.m. call or whatever, but you can do that if you're okay. Those things work very, very well for us. That's one. The other is we use a lot of enterprise social. So we use a lot of Yammer, right? Very much. And what we do is, for example, Satya Nadella does these monthly Q&As, which every employee across the world can get into on a video on demand or even live. How many companies in the world would this be possible? But the minute you use something like Yammer, it's possible, right? So we use Yam chats, okay? We call them Yamathons. Where, for example, I'll give you a live example. We had a case where there were about 160 people in Microsoft whose incentive plan changed, right? And we realized, I think it was a Wednesday evening, when we realized that people were unhappy. There was ambiguity, people were not sure what money they were going to make, incentive plans changed, how is it going to impact me, etc. This was Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday evening. Friday, 2 o'clock, we got onto a Yammer chat with us, Karan Bajwa, who's our CEO, and 140 employees all across India, and we had a Yammerthon about just that topic. So what you did very effectively is you addressed the issues of 140 people from the top management very much in real time and very much faster than you could have otherwise done it. So I was at a forum the other day where people said, does Yammer help retention? And I tell you, Yammer absolutely helps me retain people. Because I can tell, I would have had 140 CVs out there in the market where people would have thought that they wouldn't know where their money was coming from if I hadn't been able to get to them so quickly. Right? So there are things like this which completely, I don't think we realize till you actually use it, the sheer power and the sheer agility of things like this in the hands of the child. So there is a lot of this that adds a lot of value to us. The other thing we have which helps engagement is we have this wonderful thing. Think of it as an in-house LinkedIn. Right? It's something called Me.Microsoft. It basically pulls data from your LinkedIn account. And what it does really nicely is it helps you to identify, for example, the people who were in the same school with you, the same college with you. They may or may not be in your business or in your location. But what it helps is a great sense of community. Again, going back to our need to collaborate to increase your impact. So it helps a lot with community building. And it's very easy. It's one click. It takes about 3 minutes to set up because it just pulls everything from LinkedIn. The other thing we do is we do online recognition. Anytime somebody's done a really nice thing, you go into a tool. It's called Kudos. You send the tool. It goes to the person. It goes to the manager. And on their profile, their Me.Microsoft profile, it appears. So people will have 62 Kudos, 52 Kudos. So they like to share that. Right? So we do online recognition as well, and that's what I wanted to talk about here. Is there anything you'd like me to cover off before I move on? Okay.
The new reach out of L&D.
Yeah.
Something we can touch upon.
The new reach of L&D?
L&D. Like, the conventional thousands are going away.
We're doing a lot of different things on L&D. Okay, so for example, the traditional classroom sessions for a group of people on one identified set of behaviors is less effective now. Now what's happening is, one, a lot of self-directed learning, either through MOOCs or through online training or through giving people a budget, for example, and saying, hey, listen, $900 is your budget or whatever, and you can agree with your manager how you're going to spend it. Okay? Those are other things that are happening. And I think a lot of, at least what we are experimenting with, is empowering people. So it's a big theme of empowering people for their own development. So for example, we have manager circles, where earlier we used to train managers 4 times a year on a certain set of behaviors. Now we are saying, we won't train you. You tell us what you would like to learn as a group of managers. And that's the sort of stuff that will come to. So we won't tell you what you need to know. Here's what you're going to be assessed on from a manager perspective. You tell us which of these you need help on, and we'll provide that to you however you want. You tell us how you want it, you tell us what you want, and we'll find a way to get it. So a lot, to me, the biggest change in L&D that is happening is it's become far more self-directed and far more empowered. Whatever the forum, whatever the process or the methodology. To me, that is the fundamental shift. As a result of which today, more than ever before, employees are truly accountable for their own development. Managers are not, HR is not, organizations are not. Because you're pushing the empowerment down far more through various forms. Okay. I'm going to move, just to that section. Because as I said, we're spending a lot of time, a lot of energy and a lot of money here. Because we need HR to free up its time to spend on talent, on succession, on leadership, on cultural transformation, on deeper OD work. These are all time-consuming things. Answering an employee query is a quick thing. But when you want to transform completely and evolve a completely different culture, your best HR resources need to be spending all their time here. Right? And so, given the fact that you're not going to have enough money to create a completely new organization, you've got to redeploy the amount of time that your HR folks will spend. Right? So we are doing two things. We are doing a lot more self-service, and we are getting a lot stronger in HR ops. Okay? And here, all I'm going to do is give you a few screenshots to help you understand, because this is mostly tool-driven. Right? So perhaps it will trigger some ideas. HR web, right, which is the one-stop shop for anything an employee needs in Microsoft, right? So it has every information on his benefits and his pay, including queries to the payroll business, right? Including his stocks, right? It has everything he might need for his career. It has the Connect tool. It has the career guide, which I showed you for self-directed learning. It has the ability to search for jobs, because we post jobs online. It has the ability to find any training that you might want, and I'll show you the search engine in a second. It also has all your information on your career progression, the organization charts, and various HR resources. Right? So this really, it also has a task tag called Ask India. Now what Ask India, Ask HR is called, Ask HR does is, it's a single click for any transactional tier 1 or tier 2 query. Okay, so all tier 1 or tier, which is simple employee queries. My pay slip is wrong. My how do I claim car insurance? Where do I put my petrol bill? How do I claim hospitalization? So simple transactional queries, one click, and there's an SLA, a standard SLA, which of course will report from the operator company for query resolution. Okay. As a result of which, no more do HR managers spend any time on, by the way, any of this. None of it. Right? The other thing that we do is all the policies and processes are now here. Okay? So if, for example, I need to figure out how to do vacation, it's all here. So even policy queries no longer go to HR. Okay? Some of the trainings, I think we talk about mandatory trainings, here's a mandatory training. If it's mandatory training, it's likely to be posted on the internet where you can see it. Right? So for example, standards of business conduct will either be posted on the internet or will go out as a mass mail with a link. But again, tracked online. This is one of the examples of that. This is something I personally absolutely love. It's called ManagePod HR. And what it does is, it allows from an employee and a manager end, it allows the manager to see all the data about his team. Okay? His overview, the movement, who are his people, their entire history at Microsoft, including their joining date, each promotion, each salary and phase, trainings they attended, stocks they received, everything, salaries, progression, everything, right? But what it does for me is, it allows me as the HR person to have access to that information across the entire organization with a click of one button. So I have it in my favorites, I go to ManagePod, and anytime anyone asks me, hey, when was this guy promoted? I have to go to no one. I go to ManagePod and I say, oh, his last promotion was 2012. Oh, by the way, it was September. And before that, he was promoted in April 2010. So it tells me anything. How is this guy paid? How is he paid against the market? Has he attended this training or not? What was his last performance rating? What was his feedback as a people manager? And as HR, it's a great resource for you because you never are more than a second away from information which is important on anyone in your organization. That's what ManagePod HR is. We do a lot. We haven't been doing, but have in the last 3 months, moved to a manager self-service model, right? We are not home yet because these are still initial days, but a lot of the things that even HR managers used to do in the past are now being done by managers themselves. So when an employee comes in, the manager himself puts in some data to get the employee, his employee number, his where is he going to sit, send him into IT, all of that, right? When an employee resigns, he resigns. The manager accepts online. The exit interview is done online, right? So a lot of this is actually now moved to manager self-service because earlier things had to be done quickly. HR wasn't available, or you know, resources in HR are of course limited. And so what this does is it creates a lot more agility and gives managers a lot more independence. So we do a lot more manager self-service. The other big thing that we work on is SharePoint. I'm sure all of you are aware of SharePoint, but the reason it's here is because that's another big thing that is from HR helps me a lot, and I'll give you an example. Payroll. Payroll data is HBI, right? High business impact. So I can't actually, at least in Microsoft, send payroll, though I have an external vendor, through email. So when I do it, I have an encrypted SharePoint site my payroll file gets uploaded there, and it's an encrypted SharePoint site, only the vendor has access, so he downloads it at his end. Right? A lot of this sort of stuff works. All our talent management staff sit on captive SharePoint sites which are encrypted. So whether I'm in Microsoft or not today or not, it's not on my, how many of you have this problem? Taken over as HRD, no idea what happened in the last talent review. Right? But now it's on a SharePoint site, so keep knowledge management becomes far easier. So I find that's the biggest value in HR for this. Right? And we've started to use a lot more business Power BI. Business, what is it called?
Intelligence.
That's it, right? We call it Power BI, so I've never. And for example, at the click of a button, I can get, this is an actual sheet. I can actually get stuff like this. One click, one button. All right, so anything that you want to do, you have a lot of, because everything is just backed by technology, there's a lot of information you can get, and therefore decision making becomes much faster. Okay. That's what I had. I think I'm pretty much also out of time.
You have time for questions.
Questions? Okay, great. Please.
You spoke about the
operation
side rewards. This specifically on retention area, retention, areas where something which could be on the first, which has focus towards?
We've focused on retention, and what we've done is.
Yes, changes of the
money. Yeah, I'm not a believer that people leave for money. It's just something I've never believed. And without increasing money to crazy levels or whatever, we have managed to reduce attrition from 17.5% 2 years ago to 11.5% last year. Not easy. You have to do retention name by name, person by person. Exhausting. But that's when you will actually get traction. And I'll tell you why. Because different people have different things which make them tick, right? So what we did is, we put in place a retention framework where we just said, okay, on three parameters, who's high, medium, and low retention risk? And anyone who has high retention risk, we did specific things for them, right? And those three parameters were criticality to the business, likelihood of looking outside, and what was the third? Employability, right? So how employable are you? How much in demand is your skill set? What is your likelihood of looking outside, not how many consultants follow? When was your last career discussion held? When was the last, do you have a good relationship with your manager? Do you have a best friend at work? Okay. And the third was the criticality of the business. So right now I'm in the middle of this really tough project and you're the only guy who's going to be able to do it for me, so I need to reinforce you. Okay. Those are the three things we looked at. And for some people, it was change of manager. For some people, it was career discussion. For some people, it was, for very few people was it money. But we dropped by 6%. That's the sort of, yeah, the attrition is a tricky thing. I don't celebrate it. I don't know what's going to happen next year. Right?
And a related question for it. You mentioned about the processes in a high level. But you have a global kind of everything go to different people. So how are, you know, area where people can deviate from the standard processes, which is to use a control of the processes in the let's say, you know, some of the approaches. Let's say a guy introduced you have a program.
I think the framework is given. Being a global organization, the scale, and I think one is the benefit of the scale, and the other is the benefit of just the sort of thinking that has gone into this at a global level. So the framework is common, but within that framework, of course, every area has the ability to tweak and apply to local conditions.
Looking at all the perspective that you have already shared from business viewpoint and for the employees as well, I'm interested to know average life cycle of an employee in your organization. That too, does it vary from country to country or from, like you said, millennials or the Gen X or Gen Y people? So have you done that kind of analysis where you can track the average employee life cycle in your organization?
You mean average life cycle means
average tenure?
5.5% in India. In SMSG India, 5.5%. largely because a lot of our millennials are there, so they've got the average job.
Yes.
More at senior levels? It's about 12 and a half working at senior levels.
What's your experience of the mentor mentee program?
I wish I could say it's very successful, it's not. It's got mixed success, right? I think the success of a mentor-mentee program depends on a couple of things. One, the mentor and the mentee themselves, okay? So the personalities, and the other is the goals. So are we clear on what this relationship is even about? Either at an organization or at an individual level. So honestly, we are still at the stage where a mentor and mentee success, a successful relationship depends on the players involved rather than the process per se.
I'm really wondering whether the concept of mentor mentee needs to be defined, considering that we live in a connected world and everything is available for us. And we can reach out to anybody and not to a specific person for a particular issue. So I'm just trying to thought on whether a specific mentor is required as such.
You know, I think it's a really interesting idea that you can reach out and you have so many resources. The only thing I think is that a mentor adds value in terms of, so first of all, in Microsoft, we don't ask you to have one mentor. Okay, you want to have two, you can have two, you want to have three, you can have three, that's fine. And you can also choose a mentor for different things. So for example, when I'm onboarding into Microsoft, I can choose to say, this is a person who has had a very successful, who is a very successful HR being in another country. So he'll be my mentor or my peer mentor or whatever for about 6 months. After that, I'll move because here's the sort of development need I now have and I'll go to you. Or maybe while I'm learning this from you, I'll go to you as well. I think those are the advantages of being more flexible. I don't know, but I think mentor-mentee relationships are important because that 20% of the development piece is really important for us to internalize learnings. But I think you're absolutely right when you say it doesn't have to be as straight-jacketed as it used to be in the past. You can afford to be far more flexible, far more open about the whole relationship now.
Just in continuation of that, this mentor and mentee, mentor should be a cross-functional
See, I think it depends. On the role. It certainly shouldn't be your manager. Don't confuse manager and coach with mentor, right? I think it certainly shouldn't be your manager. It should be someone you can trust and someone who you respect. Two things, right? And that's it. It can be somebody junior as well. So, for example, in Microsoft now we have reverse mentoring. So, you know, some of our leadership team, Ram is here. Some of our leadership team are mentored by our millennials. So, as I said, it's just. The world is a completely new place. You know, the amount that you can do in HR is limited only by your imagination. You know, really.
Any other question that we have?
One question.
So, one of the emerging HR trend is traditional organizational-based hierarchy is going away. And any specific part from Microsoft perspective and how probably this is going to help the overall corporate?
Organizational hierarchies going away, I think, is it's definitely happening far more than it was in the past. You're absolutely right. But I think companies are taking a phased approach and they're doing more broadbanding before they go completely flat. Right? And I also think that the reality of cultural differences are very important. And especially in multinationals, the Americans, for example, or in Western Europe, they might be more comfortable with flattening of organizations and broadband, significant broadbanding, etc., than they are in Asia, or even the Middle East, where hierarchies are really important. So I think it's a reality. Organizations are gonna get flatter, pyramids are gonna get compressed, all that is happening, we're seeing it, but it's the cultural nuances are very important. Employees get very flustered. The communication around it is really critical to get right. You've got to hold the employee's hand as he navigates through that. So if you're thinking of doing it, I would just say do never underestimate the impact that it can have on an employee's perceived self-worth.
But also, also depends on how the growth in organization, what the growth you are, how the fast growth.
People seek progression, and if you don't, they look outside. How do you give that? Probably what you answered, Europe, Japan, the developed nations, the growth is not that fast.
That's right.
So how do you give that, what is happening in Asia or BRICS?
In the developed world, how do you get them the same vertical progression?
There people are stable, the growth is stable, not that fast. So Asia you said, which is rightly, the growth is pretty fast, the BRICS nation fast. So you need to show the progression to people. And therefore those hierarchies are still very much required.
Absolutely. I think there's that. One is that the growth is a lot. I think it's also our social structures. We are very Mr. Khanna ke paas badi gaadi hai, still. You know, and so is China. And so is a lot of South Asia. You know, there is also that. I need to be a so that I feel good about myself. Those are still realities. You know, and we've got to accept that this is the sort of employee base we have, and we've got to be empathetic towards it. You know, we've got to work with it, I think.
Is that changing with the startups and
millennial coming? Very much. I was at this partner summit in Agra. Himani was there as well in August last year. And it was fascinating because we had 120 of the top CEOs of our partners in the room. And there were CEOs of large companies and there were 27-year-old CEOs of born-in-the-cloud companies who said, hey, listen, I'm 27. All my employees are my friends. I don't think he's got four bands in his company, you know. So I think new organizations are completely changing the paradigm of organizational structures. And I think we're going to have to learn to coexist with that. And interestingly, when employees move from one structure to the other, they are going to have to become more agile as well in their own acceptance of different organizational structures, right?
It also depends on the size of the organization.
It does, absolutely.
As this organization becomes large, you will have
far more complexity in terms of organization hierarchy. Absolutely. You can do a lot more in small, compact organizations which are more family type.
Yeah?
Thank you very much. I hope you found this useful. It was so much fun for me.